WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Pretty excited because we have a great show in store for all of you out there. Today, we will give you a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with the new head coach and general manager of the Lansing United soccer team. His name is Nate Miller, and boy, oh boy, does he know his stuff. You do not want to miss that. We'll also chat about the World Series as the Kansas City Royals. I tell you what, just two games away now from hoisting the biggest trophy in all of baseball. Yeah, 2-0. That's what their series lead is on the New York Mets, folks. We'll chat about that. We'll have Throwback Thursday on tap for you. Early takeaways from the NBA rookies, with this being the first week of the NBA season. And how about my Detroit Pistons, huh? The red, white, and royal blue are right now 2-0 for the first time in a long time. How have they gotten it done? We'll break it down and, of course, take your calls all the way up until 2 o'clock. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we discuss here on the show, you know that number. Just dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to be a part of the show. But hey, you know what's coming next. You know how we get this party cracking. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Thursday, October 29th. All right, folks, we start with Susie Merchant and the MSU women's basketball team. They held media day yesterday, and of course, Susie Merchant has a personal connection with now former Minnesota head football coach Jerry Kill. She started her her first introduction to the press conference by sending her thoughts and prayers to Jerry Kill. Now, Merchant, entering her ninth season as Michigan State's women's basketball coach, she got her first college head coaching job at Saginaw Valley State back in 1995, while Kill was coaching the Cardinals football team. It hurt her to watch Kill's conference on Wednesday, where he said his seizures had returned and that he had to step away from football to address his health concerns. Hear what Susie had to say in just a sec. You don't want to miss it. Behind first half goals from Ryan Sierakowski and Jimmy Fiskus, Michigan State defeated visiting Oakland 2-0 on Wednesday afternoon at DeMartin Stadium. MSU improves to 8-6-2 with the victory, finishing the non-conference portion of the schedule with a 6-4 mark against non-Big Ten teams. Oakland falls to 6-8-1 with its second consecutive loss. In addition, Oakland coach Eric Pogue was ejected in the 25th minute as he was assessed his second yellow card of the match. The first came in the 17th minute. Playing the second half without two of their leading offensive catalysts, the MSU women's soccer team. They dropped a heartbreaking 2-0 decision to Ohio State last night in the final game of the regular season. The Spartans finished their year 8-6-4 overall and 4-5-2 in Big Ten play. For sophomore Jamie Cheslick exited the game after playing 37 minutes due to an injury sustained in Sunday's game against Indiana. Head coach Tom Saxton said that although he is disappointed for the team, he is proud of the year the program put together. After years under the umbrella of the Lansing Advisory Board, the Softball Classic has changed hands. The annual midseason high school fast pitch tournament, which features Lansing and Greater Lansing area teams, is now under the official sponsorship of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. The event will now be called the Hall of Fame Classic. I dig that. To go along with the name change, the tourney will see modifications in its formatting. There will now be 8 teams in the field instead of 12, and it will be single elimination as opposed to pool play. That always makes things more exciting. All right, I'm excited about this one. The Detroit Pistons are two games over 500 for the first time in more than 6 years. And the most encouraging sign may be Andre Drummond's free throws. Drummond had 18 points, 10 rebounds, a routine double-double for the big guy, going 8 of 11 from the charity stripe. And the Pistons beat the Utah Jazz 92-87 last night for their second consecutive victory to start the year. On a down note, though, the Pistons shooting guard, Jody Meeks, suffered a fracture on his foot during the game. All right, the Detroit Tigers reportedly have settled on a pitching coach, Rich Doobie, who has served 13 years as a major league pitching coach, most notably with the Philadelphia Phillies from 05 to 13. He will take over from the retired Jeff Jones. Doobie, who was 58 years old, most recently was the Atlanta Braves minor league pitching coordinator. Johnny Cueto threw a two-hit complete game, and the result was a 7-1 victory for the Kansas City Royals over the New York Mets and a 2-0 lead in the series. Of the 53 teams that have jumped out to a 2-0 lead in the World Series, 42 have gone on to win. Two of the clubs that defied the trend, coincidentally, were the 1985 Royals and the 1986 Mets.
Eric Hosmer, who has been on fire with men on base in this postseason, was the 0-1. That's up the middle. Base hit. Rios scores. Here comes Escobar. It's 3-1.
Look at him do a little wiggle on the mound.
Can't flag it down. Escobar with a backhand to get it. And Lagares cut down. The defense has shined for the Royals in October.
How about Kansas City? All right, at a time when the Dallas Cowboys are growing increasingly concerned about Joseph Randle, the Dallas running back is facing discipline for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. Randle met with NFL investigators this summer and within the past week, and the NFL determined that he violated the league's personal conduct policy, which will now carry consequences. He may be suspended, quite possibly for multiple games, for a February incident in Wichita, Kansas, where Randle was arrested for unlawful possession of marijuana after police received a call about domestic violence with a weapon after an incident with Randle and the mother of his son. Oh, boy, does it ever stop? All right, well, those are your current sports. Quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call in. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone.
Just sort of send my well wishes to Jerry Kill at Minnesota. I guess in many ways I wouldn't be here at this job in this position if it wasn't for him. He helped in the hiring process when I was at Saginaw Valley. I was 25 years old, and he gave me a shot. So, I look at my career and kind of where I've been, and you sort of appreciate those people that believed in you, maybe even before you believed in yourself in some ways. But that was a pretty heart-wrenching press conference to watch. So, Jerry, if you're out there, I just want to say I'm thinking about you and your family, and God bless, get well.
She's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. So glad you've allowed us to be a part of your Thursday afternoon. We've got a great show in store for you all. What you just heard was head coach of the MSU women's basketball team, Susie Merchant, right before she addressed her team and gave a preview to us media members who were there about her team on the upcoming year. Susie has pretty close ties with a man who announced that he would be retiring as a football coach for the Minnesota Golden Gophers, effective immediately because of medical concerns, that being Jerry Kill. And I don't know if you guys saw that press conference, but man, oh man, was that tough to watch or what? You could tell multiple times as Jerry Kill addressed the media as he sat there up on the podium, there were multiple times where he just wanted to just let it all out, just let the tears flow. Very emotional stuff. I got the opportunity to check out the entire presser after yesterday's show, and it was hard for me to watch, let alone fathom the type of emotion that was running through the body of Kill as he had to make that announcement. A man who was certainly dedicated to his craft, and that's also something Susie talked about. She compared Kill's dedication to his job as a coach. She compared his dedication to that of a Tom Izzo work ethic. Jerry Kill, it's so unfortunate to see what the man is going through, but an interesting tie, as I stated in our quick hit headliners, when it comes to Merchant and Kill, Merchant entering her ninth year as the Michigan State women's basketball coach. She got her first, I guess you could say, opportunity, head coaching opportunity at Saginaw Valley State back in 1995 when Kill was coaching the Cardinals football team. Kill was a big reason why she got that foot in the door and a big reason why she has had the immense success that she has had since 95. Of course, she went on to coach at Eastern Michigan University, did an outstanding job there, and again, in her ninth year as the head coach of the Michigan State women's basketball team. And you could hear the emotion from Susie Merchant. She said that she hadn't reached out to Kill directly, at least when looking at yesterday. She said she hadn't reached out to Kill directly via text messages or a phone call because she could only imagine what the hoopla has been like for him these past few days, trying to digest everything. I'm pretty sure he's got people calling him as we speak. So she wanted to let things die down a bit before she reached out and spoke to Kill. But it was very evident before she started yesterday's presser just how much Jerry Kill has meant and still means to her in her career, both on and off the court. So I thought that was a very classy move from Susie Merchant at MSU Women's Basketball Media Day. Folks, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I am in a particularly great mood because you guys know, I mean, I popped out the womb with an Isaiah Thomas jersey on, okay? I am the biggest Detroit Pistons fan you will ever meet. I am not shy in letting that be known, and I can say that because I don't officially cover the Detroit Pistons, all right? So this is one of the very few times that I get the chance to grace these airwaves and be a fan. And every single year, you know, I sit there glued to my TV, game in, game out, dedicated, watching these guys hit the hardwood. And you guys know, I mean, since the early 2000s, the Detroit Pistons have been a shell of that success since then. And I've just been waiting very patiently for the Pistons to even just make the playoffs, let alone be competitive, you know, to possibly win another world championship. But I'm feeling pretty good right now because the Detroit Pistons sit at 2-0. Now, I do know that right now it is very, very early. We're just talking about two games here. There's still 80 more left to play before the postseason. But at the same time, when looking at how those two games have gone and looking at how those wins have come against two pretty good teams, I got a reason to smile. I must say that. Folks, the Detroit Pistons, they sit at 2-0. Things did get a bit dicey at the end of that game. It was such a back-and-forth affair to start. Especially, I mean, looking at the very beginning of the game, you know, the Pistons started 2 of 11 from the field. They fell behind 12-5. They shot poorly throughout the first half, making just 9 field goals with 5:09 left in the first half and falling behind 34-27. And I'm sitting there saying, come on, just hang in there, make it close, make it close. And then you just start to see guys step up. And especially, and this is the thing about the Pistons, they certainly can score. They've got great offensive talent. But if you are going to win in the NBA, heck, if you're going to win in sports, you got to play defense. Point blank, period. And the Pistons just have not been a great defensive team in these recent years. So when they needed to make a stop and to close out the deal, when they had the lead with just seconds remaining, they came up big, especially this play from the young stud, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
All weapons in the ball game for the Jazz. Hood blocked by Kentavious. Pulled down by Reggie Jackson with 5.1 to play. How about KCP at crunch time?
That is what I am talking about. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope coming up huge defensively at the end, running down Rodney Hood, who was attempting a triple and finished with, 16 points. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Risky, though. That's a really risky play because Kentavious ran right at Hood, right in his grill. And we've all seen multiple times in the world of basketball how a defender running at a three-point shooter, once that defender leaves the ground, that momentum sometimes does not end up well, and that defender barrels into the shooter, and possibly we could be looking at three shots at the charity stripe. But that didn't happen. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he got it cleanly, was able to get a hand on that ball, and game over. And even before that, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he knocked down a pair of huge free throws to make sure that the Pistons salvaged the lead. I'm happy right now, folks. I'm really happy. Reggie Jackson, though, he scared me. Because, you know, there was just, and I really do believe, I think Reggie Jackson is still learning how to be a pure point guard. There's a difference between just being a point guard in the NBA and being a pure point guard. A pure point guard, and let me explain the difference. A pure point guard picks and chooses when there are scoring opportunities. He takes what the defense gives him. And you know, he doesn't force anything. While a point guard, on the other hand, it's hit or miss sometimes. Sometimes that point guard may force up a shot that you know, early in the shot clock, just force opportunities, may force a pass that isn't there. But a pure point guard is a pass-first guard. At points throughout that game, I saw Reggie Jackson looking to get his. And Reggie Jackson can score. He's a scoring guard. He can do that. But I just think that he forces things far too often. And I think that's a learning curve. And that's going to happen as the year goes on. But we saw in crunch time when the Detroit Pistons, needed to make a big play. Pick and roll came from Andre Drummond. Reggie Jackson takes the pick, does not read the roll correctly, and forces it to Andre Drummond. Andre doesn't even see it coming, and then you have a turnover in a crucial moment of the game. But again, defensively, the Detroit Pistons were able to come up huge. Got to shout out Alec Burks, though, because he was a thorn in the side of the Pistons all night. Man, that kid is good. Alec Burks, he put on a show. He put on a show last night. And, you know, it doesn't help, though. I from a defensive standpoint, the Pistons did not play that pick and roll defensively quite well until they really needed to make a stop. But at the same time, yeah, they made stops when they needed to. And this is the thing about the Pistons I like this year. When it comes to rebounding, from a rebounding standpoint, the Pistons aren't allowing teams to get up second chance opportunities. Andre Drummond, once that first initial shot is up, it's very rare to see the Pistons down low give up a rebound to a flanking guard or a forward or center in the paint. You're not going to see it. Andre Drummond, he has been a man so far. He finished again with 18 points, 10 rebounds. Marcus Morris continues to play with a chip on his shoulder. He had 14 points. And again, the Pistons did get sloppy with three turnovers, in crunch time. And the Jazz took the lead on a runner in the lane from Gordon Hayward with 23 seconds left. And I was doing some research throughout the game. Gordon Hayward, who I think is a solid player, folks. And he's a really nice piece for that Utah Jazz team. It's interesting because Gordon Hayward, you know, he averaged, 16 points last year, during like midway to the later part of the year. And, you know, he started to change something in his game. And he started to find a knack for drawing fouls and getting to the free throw line, drawing shooting fouls more specifically. He's so crafty with those pump fakes. He's so crafty with moving his body into the defender. And, you know, he had so many calls last year, so many shooting fouls called on him last year that actually raised his average from 16 points per game to 19 points per game. And we started to see that in crunch time. Gordon Hayward was able to do that, and the Pistons bit on it multiple times throughout last night's game. But I really like that Utah Jazz team as a whole. And I think this is I think the Utah Jazz are going to compete for a playoff spot without a doubt. And I think it says a lot that, you know, getting two wins over quality teams to start the year, moving to 2-0 now, from a confidence standpoint, this does a lot for Stan Van Gundy's troops. A big test is going to be, of course, this Friday when the Detroit Pistons tomorrow night will host the Chicago Bulls, who right now, again, they're undefeated. They beat LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in their very first game of the year. Last night, they also get a dub. That team looks like a force. The Chicago Bulls are going to be great. Let's just hope that Derrick Rose stays healthy. If the Pistons knock off the Bulls tomorrow, the basketball world is going to be taking notice, without a doubt. But great start. It's early, but a great start for the Pistons. It was a very entertaining game last night. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
Out doing well. Boy, yeah, kudos to the Pistons. That's all I can say. My Pelicans haven't looked so good, so I'm happy that there is a team that I can root for, who is playing their heads off. The Pistons have been fantastic. You know, when I look at this team, I think cohesion. I think togetherness. Stan Van Gundy has painted a picture of this team the way he wants it to be. And you see that with backup point guards like Steve Blake, who was fantastic yesterday.
Right.
Made all the difference. The alley-oop to Andre Drummond. You see Andre Drummond developing as a player, shooting 8 of 11 from the line. That was huge. If he shoots how he shot last season, the Pistons wouldn't have won this game. And then you see other players, Marcus Morris, Ersan Ilyasova, just playing their role. So, yeah, there's more that the Pistons need to work on, but the Pistons have beaten two really quality teams. You're right. The Jazz will threaten, if not make a playoff spot in the West.
Certainly.
And
yeah.
Then, of course, we all know just how good the Hawks were last year. That motion offense, that Kyle Korver run around five screens, that is hard to stop. And the Pistons did it. The Pistons' defense is reminiscent of that of the Orlando Magic back when Stan Van Gundy was there with the centerpiece of Andre Drummond. And boy, I just love the direction of this team. I think you're still a little bit jumping the gun, saying 4 or 5 seed. But this is a good team. This is a team that will make the playoffs, and they will not be an easy walk in the park for whoever gets them.
Yeah, I'm saying 4 or 5 seed. And again, you hit on a few of the things I wanted to talk about, and that being the depth on this team. I really think they're deeper than in years past. Again, Steve Blake, we saw him come in, and Steve Blake is a really good game manager. He's a veteran. He's been around the block a few times, and Steve Blake can come in and manage a game, and he can give you some scoring if the opportunity. Steve Blake is the epitome of a guy who's going to take what the defense gives him. He is the epitome of that. Steve Blake is a guy who, if he sees an opening, he's going to take advantage of it. Stanley Johnson was also great. How about that clutch, fast break bucket that he had to keep the momentum on the side of the Pistons in crunch time? Talk about giving what the defense, it allows you to do. He saw an opening, took the hole, got an easy layup. Stanley Johnson, he's fun to watch, folks. And again, you know, talk about efficiency here. 4 of the 5 Pistons starters were in double figures. Marcus Morris with 14, Andre Drummond with 18, Reggie Jackson with 19, KCP with 16. Ersan Ilyasova, even though he only had 8, they were an effective 8 that really set the table for the Pistons early on. I love him as a stretch four because it allows the lane not to be clogged, something that we saw in years past with Drummond and Greg Monroe down low in the paint. This is a fun team to watch, though, folks. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one. We've got Tom from Delta Township on the line. Tom, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Well, thanks, Al. How you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, my man.
Well, I just want to talk about a really good college football game that's going to be played tonight. Pat Narduzzi's Pittsburgh Panthers are playing North Carolina. They're both 6-1, and I think it should pan out to be a really good game. I'm hoping Narduzzi can continue going.
How good has Pitt been this year, Tom? I mean, I'd say, and it's really no surprise because those who followed his career as a defensive coordinator at Michigan State University, I mean, we all knew that it was just a matter of time before Pat found the right fit for him. And what he's done with Pitt, and you know, this season has been remarkable for him. Just a remarkable year for him. They sit at 23 in the nation right now. It should be a good game. I'm going to tune in for that at 7 o'clock.
Absolutely. Pittsburgh's only loss is to Iowa this year, and it was a really close game. And North Carolina's only loss this year was to South Carolina, their first game of the season. So I'm hoping, you know, Pittsburgh plays them tonight, and I think next week, I think they play Notre Dame. So they got two really back-to-back tough games.
Yeah, they do. They play them both at home as well. And then looking at last week, that 23-20 win in which Pat Narduzzi decided to gamble, and he had, you know, I think it was a fake punt, or a fake field goal, one of the two. And, I, you know, when I saw it, I said, I wonder where he learned that from, right? Unbelievable
absolutely,
win, 23-20 victory. But, yeah, Pat Narduzzi, hats off to him, man. He's doing some great things over there in Pittsburgh.
Well, keep up the good work, Al. I'm listening.
Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate the call, dude.
Yeah.
All right. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you – did you see that game last weekend,
Isaac? I did.
Unbelievable stuff. When they faked that kick, I said, okay, that's a clear page out of Mark D'Antonio's playbook. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It was impressive stuff. And, again, their only loss coming to Iowa. Iowa right now, again, we all know that they are undefeated. They're 3-0 in the Big Ten right now, and I really believe that this Iowa team is really good. And looking at the rest of Iowa's schedule for the rest of the year, I think, and, again, I keep throwing this scenario out because I think it's so intriguing. If Iowa wins out and they end up playing whoever they play in the Big Ten championship game, let's say, okay, let's say that Iowa ends up playing Michigan State
yep.
for that Big Ten championship game.
Yep.
The big question is whether or not the College Football Selection Committee will look great upon the Iowa Hawkeyes and put them in the College Football Playoff. And I'm sticking to this, I think that it depends on the matchup in that Big Ten championship game. If Iowa does win that game, because if they play at Michigan State, I don't know. I don't know if they put him in there. If they beat Ohio State, oh, you already know. Urban Meyer, if you beat the national champs, the defending national champs, you're certainly going to play in that game. But if they play MSU, there's going to be some debate about it.
I have trouble thinking that you can keep out a team that's undefeated from the college football playoff, even if they're not from a major conference, but especially if they are.
Especially the Big Ten.
Especially the Big Ten, the defending national championship conference. Man, it would be hard to keep those guys out because the point of this playoff is to give mid-majors and smaller schools a legitimate chance to prove themselves. Not in the Sugar Bowl, not in the Rose Bowl, not something where the mid-majors can say, hey, we won this, finished third in the season, undefeated. Who knows what would have happened in the national championship? The point of this playoff system, in my opinion, was to make it so that, hey, Boise's undefeated again. Let's see how good they actually are. So
right.
If Iowa goes undefeated, I think you've got to put them in the national championship.
I agree. If Michigan State ends up beating Ohio State on the road November 21st, and Michigan State ends up playing in that game and Iowa does beat MSU, you got to put MSU in because MSU is the team that knocked off the national champs if Michigan State does win on November 21st. So there's a lot of scenarios that you can play with, and we are in the sports talk world. We're in a sporting world in general where we have to throw out these scenarios because they are so intriguing. Don't want to jump the gun. There's still a lot of college football left to play, but at the same time, there are some interesting storylines that could play out. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line two. Our dear friend, we love when he calls. My man, Mike from Saginaw, is on the line. Mike, how you doing, brother?
How you doing, my man? How you been?
I'm good. I can't complain.
You know,
it's
you know
a great
what?
Thursday.
I like that you playing Bill Winters, man. I really do, man.
You like that was a nice throwback, right?
You know what? Because I figured he was one of the most underrated songwriters that America has, man. He was very underrated, man. He was just under the radar for years. You know, I just
right.
Yeah, you know, he wrote some great songs, man. Some of them songs was really good, man. So,
do you have a favorite Bill Withers tune, Mike?
Yeah, Grandma's Hands.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great one. I debate between Ain't No Sunshine, Lean On Me, and Lovely Day. Those three, oh, my goodness. You could play those all day. I love them.
I love Grandma's Hands.
Oh,
that
what about
is a
Just
great...
the Two of Us? Just the Two of Us?
Yeah, that was great, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Matter of fact, I got a Grover Washington CD in the house. I know you're familiar with Mr. Magic, ain't you?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, come on. I'm an old school. I listen to everything. Everything, Mike. Bill's my guy. Bill's my guy.
Oh, yeah. But that was really great, that I just enjoyed the music. I'm going to ask you about James Reynolds. He went to Lavonia Stevenson, but he played at Xavier. You ever heard of him?
No, I don't know. James Reynolds, you said? Do you know James Reynolds at all, Isaac?
I do not.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, because he played at Lavonia. He played at Lavonia Stevenson, but he went to Xavier. And they said if he have a good year, that he might be a pro prospect.
Ah, okay.
Xavier in Cincinnati, the Catholic school down there. But here's what I want to talk to you about, the Pistons, man. I look at their team, it seems like they're developing a bench.
They are. That's that's the big thing. When you want to go deep when the playoffs hit, Mike, you got to have depth because we all know how long an NBA year is. Injuries are going to occur. Consistency is going to dwindle off. I mean, I always say that gray period right in the smack dab middle of that NBA year when you hit like the 40-game mark is so iffy because you start to see some teams kind of peak down a bit. You know, they get it kind of lackadaisical.
Yeah.
It becomes like an ebb and flow right in the middle of that year. You got to have guys who are going to come off the bench and give you a spark. And that's big. That's going to be big for the Pistons this year.
Yes, it is. Atlanta Tuesday, and Tim Hardaway didn't pay. He's playing with Atlanta now. And I just want to know all the people that went, all these guys like Glenn Robinson, Tim Hardaway, Troy Burke and stuff, have they gotten to the point where they just peaked or they just in bad situations? Like Troy Burke, he's with an up-and-coming team.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Robinson, he's still around the league. He's with the Indiana Pacers now. I saw some highlights on him, and I also saw Mitch McGarry is in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
And I just think about, Tim Hardaway with Atlanta, do you think in the NBA, these young guys, they so happy to be in the league, but really when they get to the league, it's all depending on where your slot is. You know, is you going to be able to develop with the team you're with, or you just have to go somewhere else and find your level? What do you think?
Well, I think, Mike, when it comes to those guys who are the young pups in the league who are just, you know, it's situational. For those young guys, it's situational. It depends on the team. It depends on if there's an opportunity for the individual to make an impact. I really think that especially when looking at Trey Burke, Trey Burke came in and he was putting up solid numbers. And I really thought what threw Trey off was not only the injury, because he got injured, you know, in that first year, and he kind of was just trying to struggle to get back to full health. And then the coaching change was so sporadic.
Yes,
bringing in, what was it, Quinn Snyder.
Quinn Snyder
became the head coach, and the offensive scheme for him seemed to kind of throw him off. He couldn't get into that lather. So, again, it's circumstantial. Trey Burke, you know, having that injury and then having an abrupt coaching change like that where you have to, you know, the playbook is a bit different and the system is a bit different, it threw him off. For a guy like Mitch McGarry out of OKC, we all know how stacked that team is. For Mitch for Mitch to make an impact, he's playing behind, you know, a guy like Serge Ibaka. I mean, that's pretty tough. So when it comes to his minutes, he is going to have to make a big impact when he does get in the game. It's situational. He's not like a Karl Anthony Towns where he's the man, where he's the franchise.
Right,
so it all depends on the situation. It all depends on the team.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask you this. Did Brandon Dawson make the Clippers?
Yes, he is on the roster. I haven't seen him yet, but he is on the roster. I haven't seen a game yet. I actually, and I'm pretty excited about this, I just got NBA League Pass yesterday, Mike. So my nights are going to be riddled with just watching as much hoops as I can. I can't wait to watch BJ to see if he can, you know, get his feet wet in the league.
Al, was yours working last night?
And well, you know, they give everybody, and this is pretty cool too. The NBA, they're giving everyone out there a free trial of NBA League Pass to November 2nd. But yeah, mine was working great last night.
Oh, mine was blacked out. Every single game was unavailable.
Really?
Yep, it was terrible. I couldn't watch the Pelicans lose by 27.
Well, I guess you saved
thankfully.
Your time there.
Thankfully.
But I was going to ask you, you know, we don't get it here. We really don't. We don't get it on our cable package. We get NHL hockey. We get. Hockey, so we don't get it. It's not in the sports package in the cable system. We got a different cable company than y'all probably got Comcast. We got Charter up here, so we can't.
Oh,
they
man,
don't
that's
put
weird.
Basketball
well,
up here.
Well, I do know if you do have access to the internet, you can just get the broadband version of NBA League Pass and just watch it on your laptop as well, or your phone, or your mobile device. So there's ways you can get it as well. But
all right, then. I just was going to say, do you think Joshua Jackson really going to come back to Michigan and play ball for one of the Michigan schools?
I don't know. You know, that's a really, really good question. And that's one that you just never know what's going through the head of a young kid. I don't know. If that's one of those questions, Mike, like I always say, if I knew that, I wouldn't be here on the mic. I tell you that right now.
I heard that the guy playing Arthur Hill, he's playing in Indiana now.
Right.
Brian Bowen. I heard he went out to Indiana to play ball. I say that's kind of different because, I mean, why these guys get in high school now and they all running all over the playing for prep schools and everything, just like Bridges and Flint. And everything, which kind of surprised me that he would want to go to Michigan to play Michigan State. So
right, but I will say, going back to Josh Jackson, I will say that I think with MSU's recruiting class for that year, I mean, oh my goodness, that 2016 class is crazy with what guys like Cassius Winston, Langford, Joshua Langford, Nick Ward. That class is so stacked that I think I think that when Josh Jackson looks at MSU, he could possibly see a really good national championship contender. If he wants to win, I could see him as a Spartan.
Okay.
I don't know. Mike, great call, my man.
All right, thank you, Al, and you have a great one, man.
You too, dude. Appreciate it. Always great when you call. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll give you a preview of tonight's Current Sports Television sit-down with the new head coach and general manager of Lansing United, Nate Miller. Don't miss that and so much more. You, my friend, are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Later on in the hour, we're going to wrap our show up with Throwback Thursday. We'll also dive into the World Series as the Kansas City Royals now have a 2-0 series lead. But hey, it's Thursday. You know what we do here. We always give you guys a sneak peek look into the night's Current Sports Television chat, whoever that guest may be. And it's going to be a hot show. Hot show. You'll see footage from Midnight Madness this past weekend, which I had a great time as the MC on the night. Great, great time. You get to see footage from that. You get to hear from Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal as he breaks down high school football. Again, high school football playoffs start tomorrow. How exciting is that? 21 mid-Michigan teams vying for a spot at Ford Field to compete for a possible state championship. Fun stuff. Brian will give you his thoughts on who he thinks has the ability to cut the mustard and possibly raise a championship at Ford Field come Thanksgiving. All of that and so much more. Going to be a jam-packed show. And, of course, I sit down with Nate Miller, who earlier this month was announced as the new head coach and general manager of Lansing United. Miller resides in Spring Arbor, Michigan, is currently in his third year as the head coach of the Spring Arbor University men's soccer program. He will be the second head coach in Lansing United history. Now, the former Taylor University in Upland, Indiana standout joins the Lansing program and has compiled a 16-7-6 record and a Midwest Region Championship in his first two NPSL years. What a start. What a start for Eric Rutland, getting this team going in its first 2 years, and now Miller takes over. Nate has an interesting story. He actually has dual citizenship. He was born in Israel. How about that? So, of course, I had to start out our chat by asking him about that.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough to grow up internationally, a few different places along the road where my parents lived. And so, yeah, I grew up in Israel, so I have dual citizenship between here and Israel. And fortunately enough, I left at a young enough age, I don't have to serve in the military there. But
Make you serve in the military?
Yeah, you do in Israel, every male, 3 years. But I didn't have to do that, so.
Wow. Oh, you dodged a bullet, my man, literally, right? Age did you come here to the States?
So I came to the States at age 13.
At 13?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, looking at your soccer, well, first off, harping on that really quick, what was it like to grow up there?
I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you don't know what's normal, so it's just normal, you know? So just growing up in Jerusalem, it is what it is. And looking back, I realize how unique and special that is, you know? And I think it's benefited me now because I can relate to a lot of different types of people. I've had different experiences, but you know, at the time, it's just normal. You're just a kid. You don't know what's normal, what's not normal. So
now the sporting culture over there, I'm pretty sure soccer rules.
Soccer's
right?
Everything, man. So hopefully we catch on to the rest of the world around here, you know?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And I've always said, I mean, it looks as though, especially in recent history, I recall the World Cup with the U.S. men's team and how crazy that was. I think that was at last year, I think it was?
Yeah.
A few years ago. Yeah, I think last summer it was crazy. I mean, bars were filled around here in East Lansing. It's growing by the year.
Yep.
For you, I mean, what age did you start playing soccer out in Israel?
I mean, since I can remember, you know, it's just right. I can't remember a time where I don't have a memory where I wasn't playing. So I don't know, 3, 4, but
oh my goodness.
It's much, you know, it's not as structured. You're just playing the streets and concrete, kicking the crap out of each other, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds like fun, right? Now, for you, Nate, you played at Taylor University in Indiana. What was it like playing there? You had a pretty good career there.
It was a small college, small university in rural Indiana, and so. You know, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, how I wound up there, but had a good career, had a great experience, just life-changing time down there with my teammates and the people that impacted me, and kind of that was the experience that shaped me, you know, eventually knowing I wanted to coach. And so pretty soon after that, after doing a few other things, I wound back in the soccer world, and I hope to never leave, so.
Yeah, and I think one of those things were, well, I guess the big thing was you went to Chicago as a financial planner. Is that right?
Yeah. So I was a finance major in college, moved to Chicago, you know, doing that whole thing, and then realized maybe making a bunch of money wasn't my thing. So,
what?
So, yeah, I guess a lot of people would disagree with me and call me crazy, but I always kind of knew I wanted to coach. It was always in the back of my mind. I love the game. I just, every part of my spare time was consuming the game in some fashion, either still playing or, you know, trying to get licensed. And it's just, it's a passion of mine. And I guess I'm fortunate because I get to pursue a career that is my passion. There's not two separate things. They're the same thing. So,
right. Yeah. And now, Nate, you and I were chatting before we took the air here, and you mentioned how whoever you coach, you tell them, hey, that when your career is done, get away from the game a little bit. You know, experience the real world. Then once you experience that, you'll know if you really have a passion to come back within the game of soccer in some way, shape, form, or passion. And that's what you did, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's important to learn what it's like to be a professional. You know, when I left and just working in, I guess you can call it the real world or whatever, but I think then you find out if you really want to coach or not. And I think some guys that maybe transition too quickly to coaching don't realize, you know, it's hard to flip the switch of this is my profession. I'm a professional. This is what I do. I go to work every day because I really do believe, you know, playing and coaching are opposite careers or professions. So it really is a mentality shift. And so I think it's healthy to go do something else for a while. And then I think you realize if you truly are passionate about it or not.
What's the most difficult part
And what was the most difficult part for you, Nate, making that mentality shift from being a player to having to manage an entire roster of individuals?
Yeah. Well, it goes from you basically just thinking about yourself. Now, maybe as a captain you're not, but thinking about yourself and how you get better individually to thinking about everybody but yourself. You're thinking about the big picture. You're thinking about every individual and how they're different from each other, and but everything has to point back to the collective group and how the team is stronger. And so it's a totally different mentality shift, but it's for me it's more exciting. I love it.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. Now, for you, Nate, you came back with Taylor University as an assistant coach.
Yeah.
When did you know that you want to go into coaching?
I think when I was playing in college, I kind of knew. And then when I was up in Chicago working, I think, you know, I was my head coach back at Taylor was always calling me up. And so I just didn't know when would be the right time. And my wife was gracious enough to take a massive pay cut, and we did it. And it worked out. You know, a few years later, I have my own program, and just very, very blessed.
So. How did that conversation go with the wife?
Yeah, that was a tough one. You don't have just one of them. It probably took me 30 of them. But, yeah, she's great, man. She loves being a coach's wife. She loves having the guys over. And she's really invested in the team. Like, she's not, like, the guys know her. She loves the guys. It's just, she's part of it, man.
Now, is she a big soccer fan as well?
She used to be. You know, she's more like a shoe and purse girl, you know what I mean? So she's not, like, a big, like, athlete type, but she's learned to love it. So she has to watch it all the time, you know, so she loves it now, yeah.
There you go. That's all you can hope for, right?
That's right.
Now, Nate, right now, I mean, your time at Spring Arbor University, because you're the head coach of the men's soccer program there, you have led Spring Arbor to the national tourney in each of your 2 years.
Yeah.
How have you been able to do that in such a short period of time with Spring Arbor?
Well, we have a good setup at Spring Arbor. We have for the size of institution we are, we have an incredible facility. It's a good institution. I'm blessed to have really good players to work with. They're fantastic. And so we have bigger, you know, we made the NCCA National Tournament. We want to make the real thing, the NAI National Tournament, which is a really competitive league for people who maybe are just familiar with Division I. But, you know, I was just fortunate to work with really good players. We have a team culture that's just so strong. Guys believe in the collective group and a set of goals, and, you know, they commit their whole lives to each other and to succeeding as a team. And so, yeah, it's been a ton of fun. It's been a ton of fun developing a specific brand of play and how we go about what we do. But, yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, we're about to start our conference tournament right now. And so I hope, you know, we can this month, you know, win that, perform really well, and go on to the NAI National Tournament.
So. Now, you mentioned, Nate, something interesting there. You talked about a specific brand of play. Mm-hmm. What is that brand?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think the general public is starting to maybe understand more about soccer and what it looks like, and maybe watch it with more of a critical eye. But yeah, I think that not just winning games, that how we play is important to me. I think it's a brand of, you know, a high level of it's a fast tempo of possession, so it's exciting to watch. So what I told Jeremy, you know, when I came on with Lansing, is that I think people will watch a Lansing United game and know what they watched. Like, they'll leave there going, that was fun. So it's definitely, it's a high, you know, it's got a high tempo, fast pace, but valuing possession of the ball, and then a high pressure game, meaning pressing from the front, having players that, you know, have a lot of work ethic, but, you know, also possess all the talent. So it's kind of a, you know, you leave a Lansing United game, I'm hoping, you know, very entertained and being like, I watched something special, not just another team, you know, kick the crap out of each other a little bit.
Right. So, yeah. So kind of like, you know, I'm a big hoop guy, so kind of a fast break every possession.
Yeah, almost. In a sense, but retaining the ball, you know, not the possession doesn't, you know, fluctuate from team to team. We really make teams chase us around, retain the ball, and when we don't have it, putting the opponents under a lot of immediate pressure.
Gotta love that. It should be a fun year, to watch. Yeah. Now, for you, Nate, getting the job with Lansing United, how did that whole thing come about? Did Jeremy reach out to you? I mean, how did you end up here?
Yeah, really fast it went about. I think it's something, you know, coaching at an NPSL team or at PDL team is something that's always been interesting to me. And as soon as the Lansing United job opened up, I was like, wow, that's something I'd really like to do in the summer. I didn't act on it. And then a couple days later, Jeremy just called me. And to this day, I don't know. I'd have to ask Jeremy, like, why he called me or who he talked to before he called me. I don't know. I don't really care. He called me, and I told him, yeah, I'd really be interested. And we got together, spent some time together pretty informally, and it was just a good fit. You know, his vision of what Lansing United is and will be really got me excited. And I think him listening to me on how I want to run a club and the types of players I want to bring in and how I want everyday life to look like was exciting to him. And it's been great so far. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
Now, you've mentioned a bit of your vision as far as what's going to take place on the field and what type of a game we can see from Lansing United, a very exciting, high-paced game. What is the vision that Jeremy has for this team that he shared with you during those informal conversations?
Yeah, so he's the marketing guy. He's the big picture guy. So, he's done an extremely good job the past 2 years developing a brand of Lansing United. I mean, when you go to a game, it's fun. There's a lot of energy. The fans are fantastic. So the brand of Lansing United is there, and he wants to take it to new heights. You'd have to ask him about that. But, you know, Jeremy's always, let's make it bigger and better. Mm. You know, and my job is to do that on the field. You know, he's very well connected and has a great heart and just has big aspirations for the club. And my job is to make sure that the quality on the field matches what type of brand Lansing United is in the Lansing community.
Now, looking at the Lansing United team in its infancy, I mean, United has compiled a 16-7-6 record and a Midwest Regional Championship in the first 2 years.
Right.
You taking over this squad with those type of expectations and that type of early success. Yeah. I mean, is it a bit mind-boggling?
Yeah, I don't care about pressure. I never operate out of fear. I think that, you know, the first year was incredible. I mean, they went on a run. And then the last year, there was a dip. I mean, they finished sixth in the conference. And I think, you know, it's tough because your roster at the NPSL level is fluctuate so much. I mean, it's so hard to bring back the same roster as you have in the past. And so it's always changing. And so, I think we can, I hope to take it to new heights. I really do. I think we will. I think you'll see a lot of new faces, guys that I've been connected with over the years, maybe who are playing other countries, and then bringing in the top college talents in the state to play in Lansing. That's the goal. And so, I'm excited for it. I think it'll look different. But I think that, you know, Lansing has had an incredible first 2 years. But I think we can take it to new heights. I think it really does have that sort of appeal. I think when you talk about Lansing United, it just sells itself. I mean, when you go to a game, you're like, this is great, you know?
So
I think it's, we're going to establish a professional atmosphere to train and play in, and I think that'll attract the exact types of players that Lansing United want to sing for. So
now you mentioned attracting certain players, and I'm sure that you have a close finger on the pulse of what Damon Rensing and the MSU men's soccer team has been doing, especially in recent years. I mean, what's your relationship like with Damon?
It's good. He's been really good to me. Damon's just been nothing but gracious to me when I go up to his camps, and he's got a really good coaching staff. I know both his assistant coaches, and, you know, obviously Ben coaches for Detroit City, which is Lansing United's rival. And so, no, Damon's been good to me. Obviously the success of Lansing United is very much tied towards getting the top Michigan State, you know, players, or, you know, Michigan State players that want to stay and play in their hometown for the summer, which I think is an attractive deal. And obviously for the first 2 years, you see the impact that guys like, you know, Jimmy Fiscus have had on Lansing United, because, you know, they're leading the charge with Michigan State. And so, I think it's crucial to bring in state players who can kind of lead the charge of what Lansing United is. And it's important, but Damon's been nothing but really good to me, and they have a really good young team. I mean, they've had success in the past. This year they're taking a look, you know, going through a little bit of a phase, I think, but their young talent is ridiculous. I mean, in a couple of years they'll be as tough as anybody in the country.
Nate, does it make your job easier knowing that, hey, Michigan State isn't that far away compared to the location of where you guys will be?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, Michigan State being right in Lansing, I mean, that's a huge, I think that's what makes Lansing United, so one of the reasons what makes this club so appealing and strong.
Again, that was Nate Miller, the head coach and GM, the new head coach and GM of Lansing United. If you want to catch Current Sports TV, you can do so tonight. At 10:30 p.m. on WKAR TV. You can catch that interview as well as the 12th man and a ton of news as we recap you from what has occurred since last week Thursday when we hit the Current Sports TV airwave. So don't miss it. 10:30 p.m. tonight on WKAR-TV. Phone lines are open. Only 5 minutes left. 517-355-9527. Let's go to line three. We've got my man Ray on. Ray, how you doing?
Go Gophers. Beat those bullies Saturday night.
Minnesota and Michigan.
Yeah.
This weekend. Michigan trying to come off, of course, that crucial loss, that heartbreaking loss to Michigan State at the Big House. It's been 2 weeks now. Of course, they had a bye week last week. What do you think is going to go down this Saturday,
Ray? I'm going to tell you, that coach for Minnesota, I knew 2-3 years ago he was in trouble. He had 3 or 4 epilepsy attacks on the field. I couldn't believe they let him stay as long as they did. But I'm hoping they'll get the game ball for him after the game and they beat Michigan. That's what I'm hoping. But I don't know. It's going to be tough because Michigan's coming off a loss. They're going to be fired up. But they could be a little bit flat, you know, too, from losing. Did Harbaugh take any heat like he should have for that 10-second play, the punt block?
I don't think. I think for many Michigan fans and for the college football world, I mean, from many people who look at that play, they view it as, hey, it is one of those plays that, hey, it happened. It's a miracle that it happened. And they're not bashing Jim Harbaugh for the little tweaks that he could have made that he could have made to protect his punter more and Blake O'Neal. But at the same time, it's one of those plays. It's just a crazy play. So I don't think you can put all of that blame on his shoulders.
All he had to do was fall on the ball or try to get the first down. It would have been down to 4 or 5 seconds, okay?
Crazy play.
When you guys made it 23-21, it put pressure on him to think on his 2 timeouts. If he didn't want Connor Cook to have the ball back at 50-yard line with a Hail Mary pass into the end zone.
Yeah, and looking at the percentage of chances that would have happened, though, Ray, we've seen crazy things happen in the world of football, and we saw it on that night, sure. But, I mean, no one's expecting that to happen. I mean, nobody thought that Blake O'Neal was going to, you know, punch the ball right into the hands of Jalen Watts-Jackson into the end zone. So
it was a miracle play.
But, yeah, so now defensive coordinator Tracy Clayus takes over for Jerry Kill as Jerry, of course, announced his retirement due to health concerns.
Clayus, coach of the year last year?
Was Kill coach of the year?
Yeah, I think he was a coach of the year or something in the Big Ten.
I'm going to have to look that up.
You remember they beat Michigan in the Big House 30-10. They only beat them. I think they've only beat them 2 times in 30 games or something like that. Minnesota always gets beat by Michigan, but I'm hoping they can make it 2 years in a row. You know, 7 out of 8 for you guys, that's the best you've ever did in the whole series. Ever.
Yeah, it's been an impressive run for Michigan State over Michigan. But Clayus and Jerry Kill was the coach of the year last year. Isaac just confirmed that with me, which is impressive in itself. But Clayus has his work cut out for him, though, with Minnesota having lost, 2 of its last 3, running into the most difficult part of its schedule, matchups at number 1 Ohio State next week and at number 10 Iowa the week after that. I don't see Minnesota winning this game on Saturday, Ray.
Well, you know, funny things happen with emotion.
Yeah, that is true.
That coach will be full. And, you know, I don't know if the coach is going to go to the game or not, but if he does, if they happen to win that game, which it'll be tough because Michigan's coming off a loss and they'll be ready, but I'd give him the game ball and carry him off the field.
That would probably be the best moment of the weekend if that does happen. Ray, my man, great
I
call, dude.
Pray for the man.
Yeah, it's tough, and thoughts certainly go out to him.
God bless you. Thank you, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Ray. Always a great call, man.
Bye-bye.
All right, quick throwback Thursday. Here we go.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes.
All right, just a few moments for you. On this day in 1973, O.J. Simpson of the Buffalo Bills set 2 NFL records. He carried the ball 39 times and ran for 157 yards, putting him over the 1,000-yard mark at the 7th game of the year. Also in 1995, Jerry Rice of the 49ers became the NFL's career leader in receiving yards with 14,040. How about that? Folks, thanks so much for tuning in to today's Current Sports. We'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Be easy, people.